tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Good morning. Welcome along to Tip Today. Lots happening between now and 12. We look at the latest situation on Brexit. Callers relayed their own experiences of being a carer in Tipperary. We chat about Care Enterprise Town. Our wine guy, Gary Gubbins, talks roasts and full-bodied reds. Mairead has advice for all that ails your four-legged friends and much, much more. Judy is by the phones right now on 1800 938 007. That's our free phone number. It won't cost you a cent to talk to Trudy today. You can text on 083 311 3311. You can email tiptoday@tipfm.com at any time of the day or night. And as ever, whatever way you make contact with us, you'll be made very welcome indeed. Now, we've two prizes for you today. We have that 7-foot fresh Christmas tree, and that's courtesy of Pine Nurseries in Burncourt. And they're the Christmas tree experts, as well as that, to celebrate an Echo Shoes promotion at Moroni's Footwear in Clonmel. We have a €25 voucher to give away, and both those prizes based on your interaction with us by text, joining in the conversations, coming up with something brand new. So do get texting now if you want to get up on your soapbox. It's 083 311 3311, but give us a full name and an address so that we can enter you properly into our competition. Let's have a look at the headlines today. The Gardaí are at the scene of a shooting in Dublin where a Garda and another person have sustained gunshot injuries. The incident occurred this morning in the Ballymun area. Efforts to break the logjam in the Brexit talks are set to intensify today. The Taoiseach says he's willing to consider any proposed changes to the text of the deal that would allow the talks to move to phase two. And over 200 people spent more than 24 hours in the emergency department at Tipperary's main hospital in September. South Tip General is one of a number of hospitals across the country which have failed to meet the HSE targets for dealing with patients attending emergency department. So there you go. That's a look at what's making headlines today. 1800 938 007. Now, yesterday on the programme, we spoke with Mary about carers, the incredible work they do and how little they are recognised and what little support they receive from the state. We were inundated with texts and callers. And joining me now is Mike Greenfield, who is himself a full-time carer. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning, Fran.
It's good to talk to you today, Mike. You are a carer for your wife, is that right?
I am, that's right, yeah.
Would you tell us that and what's happened where your wife is concerned?
Well, she inherited a disease called spinocerebellar ataxia and scar 17. Now, she's got a very rare form of this disease. There's only five others in the world that have actually got this disease to the extent that she's got it, and one just happened to be her sister as well.
My God. And how long is she in the situation that she needs full-time care?
Well, I looked after her for 10 years before we actually got somebody to come in on a daily basis, just for an hour and a half a day, to give her a shower and look after her sort of personal needs, you know.
Now, there's much talk since that RTE programme the other night about the plight of carers and how difficult it is. Can you just give us a notion of what life is like as a full-time carer, Mike?
Oh, God. I get up at 5 o'clock every single morning, getting her ready, get her breakfast so that she's ready to have a shower and have her personal attention by the time the girls come in around 7:30 to give her a shower and do her makeup and things like that. You know, it's just an ongoing thing because she's also got dementia and she has incontinence problems as well. So she's up and down going to the toilet, and I have to be there because with this disease, she can't walk unaided. She's on a Zimmer frame, and also she's very, very very, very dodgy on her feet. You know, I mean, she could fall over at any time, and she has done in the past, where I've had to take her from my house back down to the hospital to get stitches put in her head. So yeah, it's she's a 24/7 7 days a week situation in regards to you have to be there at all times. I mean, then you've got incontinence problems, you've got dementia, you have to explain things 500 times a day to her so that she actually understands. You know, it's just an ongoing thing, and I mean, I can understand from carers as well, because they're in the same situation. I mean, it's a very, very arduous, hard job, and it's also, you know, it's very, very emotional, because you're dealing with somebody that you love, and, you know, even if it's your mother or one of your parents or an uncle or whoever it is, a child, you know, you're completely attached to that person, you know, and you're trying to do everything possible and get everything possible as you can for them, so that they have a happy life. I mean, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, "Oh, hello, I want spinocerebellar ataxia or any disease or any neurological disease." You know, that just doesn't happen. You know, as I say, you know,
I presume as well it's all consuming of your own life, Mike, in terms of...
Oh God, I mean, I used to be a full-time soccer coach, you know, and really that's all gone out the window now. I mean, I try and get myself out twice a week now in the evening, just for an hour an evening on a Monday and a Wednesday. You know, that to me is a lifeline, because, you know, it's interaction with people, because otherwise I don't think I'd be able to have a conversation with anybody, to be quite honest with you. I mean, your life, to be quite honest with you, when you become a carer, is turned upside down.
You know, in terms of the kind of help that you're getting from the state, you talk about you have a lady coming in there. Is that paid for by the state?
That's paid for by the state. That's Monday to Friday. That's just for an hour and a half a day. That's to give her a shower and do some makeup for her, and that's it. That's a lot. Before that, I'd done it for 10 years myself. I was showering myself 7 days a week, trying to get makeup onto her. I mean, obviously, I'm not a makeup artist, as you know, I'm a man, you know, we just don't sort of do these things, but I've done it as best I possibly could, you know.
So that's all you get, and of course, the carer's allowance is...
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Is a joke, really.
Carer's allowance is the biggest joke I've ever, you know, these guys, like this year, they give pensioners a €5 upgrade to their money, weekly allowance. And the same as us, and give ourselves €5,000. You know, I mean, how does that equate into the real world? It doesn't, and that's all there is to it. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I think I'm speaking for the biggest majority of carers out there. You know, they're struggling with money, and especially now Christmas coming up. You know, I don't look forward to Christmas anymore, because to me, it's just more money that I've got to find, you know, that sort of thing. It's really, really hard, you know.
Do you get help from family, Mike? How does that work?
not really, to be quite honest with you, because, I mean, my two girls, one's got 4 children and one's got 3 children, and they have a lot of activities for the kids on a daily basis. So, you know.
So their hands are full, obviously.
Their hands are full. And, you know, I think I feel for them as well, because they have slight embarrassment. I mean, you think of it, they don't have a mum that can go shopping with them, or, you know.
It's very difficult for everybody. I often spoke to Richie Malloy as well, who from Family Carers Ireland, and I was making the point, Mike, that carers are sometimes landed into the job of being a carer almost overnight. Do you know what I mean? You're going about your life, and then something profound happens in your family that causes you to become a carer, whether you're prepared for that or not.
You're never prepared for it. It's like jumping out of an airplane. You don't know what's around the next corner, to be quite honest with you, and you don't know with any neurological disease, you don't know how it's going to, you don't know what you're going to wake up to the next day. I mean, in my wife's position, I mean, it's changing on a daily basis now. I mean, I see, because you're with them 24/7, you see the small differences on a weekly basis, you know. I mean, especially in the morning, she'd be a morning person. She'd be sort of not too bad in the morning, but once the day progresses and you get into night, I mean, I have problems getting her down the corridor to get her into the bedroom because she's completely worn out, and her mobility is non-existent, to be quite honest with her.
Shamie Morris was on to us to say that you gave time freely coaching soccer teams during all of this as well.
I did, yeah.
You're very generous of spirit, obviously.
Well, look, there's an old saying, if things don't change, they'll stay the same. And where carers are concerned, you wake up every morning to the same thing. I just say to the girls when they come in here, just a bit of a crack with them, you know, another day at the office. And that's where it is. I mean, you see, the situation, whether you're married or not, or whether it's a parent, you change. You're no longer sort of married to that person. You're detached from that situation because you look at your loved one in a completely different aspect. You know, I know it's very, very hard to sort of say, but that is the way it goes. Unfortunately, you know, yes, my wife is still my wife, but I'm now her carer. I'm now looking after her full time, and it's a completely different aspect in life.
So it's a different dynamic completely.
Completely different altogether. It's you know, you have to, like you said a few minutes ago, you have to completely change your whole identity, to be quite honest with you. You see, when I was doing coaching and everything, yeah, my phone was like a hot potato. You know, I was getting different text from different people all day long and seeing people, and now my phone has gone dead.
That must be very difficult for you.
Massively difficult.
And what about friends, mutual friends that you would have had over the years? Do people visit? Or?
No. I mean, I spoke to a friend of mine from football actually last week. His wife's just been given, she's got multiple cirrhosis now. And he said to me, Mike, everything that you've been saying to me over the last 10 years is, I didn't believe it at the time, but you're completely right. I said, I told you, Robert, that's what happens. You know, you soon find out who are your real friends. I'm sorry. I mean, I know it's, you know, that's life, unfortunately, but, you know, there's people out there that look at carers as though, you've got a very easy job. But I always say to people, until you're wearing my shoes, you have no idea at all of what carers have to go through. You know, and I think I'm speaking for every carer. A carer's life is very, very hard, and they are what they are. They're very, very caring people.
You must get angry at times, particularly where the politics of all of this is concerned.
I get massively angry, to be quite honest. I have mood swings and all that. And when I start speaking to people, I actually start talking out of their backsides in regards to they're experts on what carers do. I'm afraid, sorry, carers are the only ones that know exactly what carers are doing. I mean, last week you had somebody from the person who's in charge of the Carers Association.
Yes.
Now he actually said that the Minister for Health made a comment. This is, I mean, I don't know how educated these people are. That's why we're paying carers an allowance to do the job they're doing. Well, I've got news for him. He can come in here for an hour of any day. And we'll see how he gets on, because he'd be running out that front door within 10 minutes. You know, when you've got to wipe somebody's backside, you've got to clean up poo, you've got to clean up vomit, you've got to put incontinence pads on. You know, I could go on and on and on. You know, it's only a carer that cares about that person could do the job that carers do and caregivers, you know.
But only somebody with loads of love for the person could do that either.
That's what you got to have, friend. I mean, not any person can be a carer. You've just got to have that demeanour, you know, and I think it's the way that your parents have brought you up, to be caring, loving, and to care about people.
Did you discover depths in yourself that you didn't know you had, for instance, that you could actually cope with a situation like this?
I did, yeah, but I mean, you know, because it happened it happened over a period of time where, you know, you saw everything happening in front of you and all that, and you just had to change. I mean, when my wife started getting bad, I mean, when I was doing coaching and being a soccer manager, I came home one day in the winter at 6 o'clock, and I found her in the dark, that she'd fallen over a bucket. She was soaking wet, and that was the day that, you know, I decided, you know, enough is enough now. Soccer has to take a back burner.
You just had to be there.
I couldn't be, you know. I can get into town quickly now, but I couldn't sort of start talking and having a crack with somebody for too long, because I know that I've got to get back. You know, I don't know what I'm going to actually meet when I've been out for 15 minutes. No, that's it, you know.
Can you look to the future at all, Mike, or is it literally day by day,
friend, yeah. To be quite honest with you, you can't look too far down the road. It's like kicking a bucket down the road and see where it lands, but no, on a daily basis, that's how my life is, unfortunately, you know, and that's the way it's going to be, because, I mean, I made a promise to my wife that I would never put her into a home, that I would always be there and look after her.
That's an incredible commitment.
And that's what I intend on doing, you know.
What politicians tend to listen to us in the county, Mike, so this is an opportunity to speak to them. What have you to say to them?
I personally think every carer's house should be retrofitted, because, you know, carers are freezing cold, and that's all there is to it. You know, I mean, I've applied to these organisations, temporary warm homes, yeah, and when they come around, they give you the spill on a bit of paper of how much it's going to cost. Then when you say, oh, yeah, that's what I'd like an insulated outside, please. Oh, no, you can't have that. And then that's kicked down the road again. You know, carers and the people that they're caring for need to be warm in the winter, and they're not, and that's all there is to it. A carer is thinking about, they're like a bank manager, they're looking at finance on a daily basis and a weekly basis, how they can make ends meet.
Can I be intrusive enough to ask you, what is the carer's allowance at the moment?
€209 per week.
€209?
Yeah. And if anybody can live on that, then they're a better person than I am, you know. And that's doing everything, your food, you know, your bills, heating, you know.
One of the big problems carers would have, of course, is that you can't protest. I mean, how do you get away?
Well, you can't. But the government know this. They know that situation, that they got you in a situation where you can't. You've got to be downtrodden and do exactly what they say, you know. And if they're lucky, you're lucky enough that they say they grant you €4 every year as a nice bonus. You know, to me, they're just living in cuckoo land, I'm afraid, you know.
And of course, they're patronising as well, because they come out and tell you how wonderful you are, but still,
absolutely ignorant. Ignorance, yeah. That is, to be quite honest. You know, I just completely close my ears to that sort of nonsense, to be quite honest. As far as I'm concerned, nobody will convince me. Caregivers and carers are the most fantastic people in the world.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Huge reaction, as you can imagine, on the phone and by text as well to Mike's conversation with me, and we will bring you some of those texts very soon. But right now I'm joined by George Hogg. George, good morning to you.
Morning, Frank. How are you?
Good to talk to you today, George.
Thanks very much, Frank.
You're a carer as well, George.
I am. Myself and my wife, we care for Christopher, our son. He's now 31 since 2 weeks ago. And he was diagnosed with what he has when he was about 14. Up to then, nobody knew. None of the doctors or anyone that examined him could tell us exactly what was wrong with him. But he actually attended Crumlin Hospital from the time he was a year and a half until he was 18, three times a year.
And there was no diagnosis for 14 years?
For 14 years, no diagnosis was. None whatsoever.
And the diagnosis is what exactly, George?
It's a syndrome that his own doctor never even heard of. A syndrome called Kabuki. K-A-B-U-K-I. It's a syndrome that you really want to look up on the internet to see what it's all about. He could have 101 things wrong with him, from his heart to his lungs to anything.
Right.
That's what it is. It's really a learning disability, and some of his looks and all, that's what it is.
So you're both caring for him. And again, the role of the carer, I think you might have been listening to Mike there as well. Oh, I presume you'd agree with him on a lot of what he was saying, George.
On television the other night.
No, just Mike, who was speaking to me before the break there.
Oh, God knows, I was leaving up my chickens.
All right, okay. So tell me, coming out of the programme the other night then that was on TV, there's so many people talking. What about the carers and how they're looked after then?
I got from that programme that people might think that carers are looking for money or carers are looking for a free weekend or a free week away in a hotel. We're not. Carers don't look for a free weekend or a free week anywhere for free. And we could do with some extra money if we got it, if the money was there to give to us. But at the moment, I don't think it is there to give to us, but we will take it from anybody that will give it to us. But Frank, look, talking about that on the programme the other night on television, now people are watching it, then they might think, children with special needs, and they're watching the programme, they might have felt that it was horrific to watch. But like, it's a natural way of life for us who have a special needs child, the way we look after them. And they're one of the family. I said, thanks be to God, our child was our last child that we had. We had three children before that, and they're all grand. But if you have your first child, and if that child has special needs, the other children, down through the years, will feel that they're not getting the same love that they should be getting, or the same care as a special needs child is getting. But it takes an awful lot of time and courage, because like raising a child with an intellectual disability or any other kind of disability takes huge courage, hard work, an abundance of love. And just imagine now, as young parents today are coming along and they have a special needs child, not knowing where to turn, the looks and comments that they're going to get about their child, and worrying about what's going to happen to their little boy or girl in the future.
Isn't that a huge issue, worrying about the future?
It's a massive issue, but really, we shouldn't worry too much about it, because normally you will have somebody in the family that will look after the child. I know it happens in an awful lot of families. Once you have a special needs child and you're looking for help, let it be from your own family, your own relations, some of your friends, they don't come near you once you have a special needs child.
Do they not?
They do not. No, you're left on your own. You're left on your own. Like that woman that was on the on your program the other morning, and that she was talking about how she felt that she went to bed, that she couldn't watch all the program. Now, that woman would have been better off if she woke up yesterday morning, and if she knows anybody that has got a special child, to go and knock on their door. There'll be a child or an adult. Let them go and knock on a person's door and ask them, look, listen, do you want to go for a walk, or do you want to go for a cup of coffee, or do you want to go out and do a bit of shopping, and I'll look after your child for an hour or two while you're going away? That is what we call respite.
That's interesting, Mike made the point to me, George, just earlier on as well, that the phone stopped ringing, people stopped calling. The friends who were friends for years, they no longer take part.
They don't, no. Yeah. You could have a child. And we say up to the time there, we say 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, 6 years of age, all their friends. If you're now, I live out the country, but if you're living in the housing estate and a child, he or she would have a load of friends up to the age of about 12, 13. And you will notice all them friends slowly moving away, getting distant and more distant from them. That eventually, now when you take child with special needs when they come to 18, 19, 20 and they see other kids going off to discos and everything like that.
Yeah.
Now, we would love it. Any parent with a child with special needs would love if someone would come along and say, look, listen, we're going out to bowling or we're going swimming or we're going to the pub to watch a match. Would you mind if we brought your child with us?
And does that ever happen?
Nah. No. Well, I have a son that brings Christopher. If he's ever going down to watch Munster play in Limerick, he'll bring Christopher with him. That's no problem there. But other than that,
it wouldn't happen.
No, it wouldn't happen, no. Like, as you know, friend, like, I hold things for kids with special needs in Clonmel.
I know, yeah.
And look, you know yourself, as I often said to you, I hold a disco for them.
Yeah.
But I don't care, let him be a child in a carry cot. Let him be a 101 years of age. They could come to our discos up in Hillview. And we only charge €2. They're not a fundraising thing. All they are is something that a child or an adult with special needs can come along and enjoy themselves. And they're paying their money. They feel, well, I'm paying to go this. It's my money. I'm paying for it. I'm lucky to get 20, maybe 25 people turn up. And most of them will be from around Carrick, Cashel, maybe and Clare.
Yeah.
Just very few from Clonmel coming. And I know of loads of families in Clonmel that have kids with special needs.
And why do you think they wouldn't attend something like that?
I don't know, Fran. I just don't know. I just don't know. It's unbelievable.
Because you'd imagine it would be good for those kids to get out and about and mix
it is. But an awful lot of them, just look, Fran, people just keep their children when they... I don't know whether they want to mix them with people or whether... I know that's an awful thing to be saying.
Yeah.
I don't mean that they don't want to be mixing with people. We would love if boys and girls would come along and meet them and get to know them and make friends with them. You will not catch what they have. You won't get a disease from them. They won't fight you or bite you. But you will, I'm telling you, the love and the enjoyment that you will get out of all of any of these children, no matter what age they are, it is unbelievable.
What I'm getting from you is that people who might have watched that programme the other night or heard articles on this programme or whatever, rather than saying, oh God, that's terrible and I feel awfully sorry for these people and one thing and another, they'd be better off to take part and do something.
They'd be better off. We don't want pity from anybody. Now, as simple as that. Our child was conceived, and any child with special needs is conceived the same as any other child. They're born and they're reared. They have feelings. They bleed. And their blood is red, not green. They are human beings. As like you and I. As simple as that. That's the only way I can put it. There is nothing to be afraid of. And we would love people to come along and meet us. And join in. But just, like, it's so hard. And
are you saying that's more important than money or services or facilities?
Oh, no. Well, we need services.
Yes.
We do need services.
But the friendship aspect of it...
The friendship aspect of a child growing up. Like, I'll give you just one example of my little fella. There, we were at my daughter-in-law's birthday party. Or her father's birthday party there a while ago. And they were all adults there. And they were all heading off at about 11:30 to go into Danos. So that's the place there, the Hounds Hotel, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, well, that's where they're going. And Christopher was there, and he was just standing looking at him, hoping God that one of them would ask him, Christopher, do you want to come with us? The look on his face. Now, I went home that night, and I nearly cried. It took me hours to go to sleep, thinking of his hardship that he felt. And every child like that, they do. They feel, they have feelings, and they feel sad, and they feel sorry, and they feel let down by people. As simple as that.
All right, George. Well, listen, you make your points very well as usual. And good to talk. Happy Christmas. I presume will you be Santa?
I'm not Santa up to town this year. I just said I take, but I am Santa going. I will be Santa next Sunday over in Old St. Mary's Church from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock at the Christmas fair over in the church, you know, it's St. Mary's Church, Derry Street. And then I'm up in Hotel Manila from 4:30 to 6 with the autism group.
Very good indeed.
Listen. And my furthest away gig this year is in Bovan Duella in a small creche.
Right, very good indeed. You're getting around, that's for sure. George, great to talk. Happy Christmas to you.
Can I just say one thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing that I come up with myself. It's a saying.
Okay.
Don't let the darkness of the past destroy the brightness of their future.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Efforts to break the logjam in the Brexit talks are set to intensify today. British negotiators are working on a new form of words to deal with the border issue. Now, the original wording was vetoed, as you know, by the DUP, which is propping up Theresa May's minority British government. In a moment, we'll be speaking to John Cushnahan, former MEP and founder of the Alliance Party, and indeed former leader of the Alliance Party. But first of all, let's hear the latest reaction from Leo Varadkar.
What is important to us is the outcome from the language that we use. And the only way that we can avoid a border developing is to make sure that we've roughly the same rules and regulations on both sides of the border. I agreed to examine any text that they would put forward in a positive light, understanding that it is in our interest as a country to move to phase two, because that's when we talk about transition and trade and aviation, all those things that are so important to Ireland. And also because I want us to put Irish-British relations back on the cordial and friendly footing that they have been on in recent years. That's been slightly disrupted by Brexit.
And John Cushnahan joins me online. Good to talk to you again, John.
Good morning, Fran. Good to talk to you.
And there's so many aspects of this that is just farcical. For instance, John, how did Theresa May possibly have proposed that the six counties, in effect, might remain within the EU without knowing that the DUP were going to throw a tantrum?
Well, it was extremely foolish of her to do so. It was extremely foolish of her not to consult the DUP, because they have a supply and confidence. The British government and Theresa May, as the head of it, has a confidence and supply agreement with the DUP. And when I saw the terms of that deal, I immediately sensed that the DUP would be in total opposition, because it does, from their perspective as unionists, separate Northern Ireland from the rest of the United Kingdom. And it's understandable that they should react the way they do, but why didn't she consult them? We're now in a mess again. The challenge facing all of us is to find a way out of this mess. And I think also this controversy underlines the imperative need to have a power-sharing arrangement back in Northern Ireland, so that we have an input into this process through other parties than the DUP.
And, I mean, Sinn Féin has an obligation where that is concerned, you would imagine, to get that back up and running again.
I would think so, and I really do think that Sinn Féin should reassess its attitude about taking up Westminster seats, because the future of this island and its relationships with the UK lies significantly in the hands of the DUP in terms of how the debate continues to evolve at Westminster. Obviously, the Irish government has a role in the context of Europe, but we have no input, save for the DUPs, into the Westminster process, and that is disastrous and very threatening to this ending in the right way.
Were you concerned about David Davis's performance yesterday? I mean, it was most peculiar, wasn't it?
Well, what it demonstrates and illustrates, there was a decision by Britain to leave the EU, and it becomes clear day by day that since that decision was made, there has been no, absolutely no preparation on the part of Britain for the, when that would actually happen. And I was horrified that there had been no sectoral impact analysis carried out by the British government to understand the consequences of a Brexit deal on business, etc., and its various sectors in the UK. It just is frightening. And the more the story unfolds, the more one becomes frightened at the absolute mess the situation is in, primarily because of the dysfunctional nature of British politics, with the Conservative Party in total disarray, with so having totally different views on the subject.
Do you think a wording will be found today or tomorrow that will bring people back together again in some way, John?
I hope so. I mean, I think, and I'm no fan of the DUP, but I recognise the genuine fears of the unionist community in Northern Ireland, because unfortunately, as you well know, that for the last couple of years, Sinn Féin have been pushing the idea that Brexit opens the door for Irish unity, and they're pushing for border polls, and that has unnerved the unionist community, and it shows the irresponsible nature of such sort of opportunist politics. And the deal that was offered on Monday is a deal that would suit us particularly well and suit the people of Northern Ireland particularly well, provided the unionist section of that community didn't feel they were being sold down the river constitutionally. And I think that Leo Varadkar is absolutely right to raise the question of, look, we stand by the principles of the deal on Monday, but we're prepared to consider additional wording. And I think what should happen is the government and those who are in partnership with it in the confidence and supply agreement, I primarily Fianna Fáil, could offer a formula of words to demonstrate that what our only interest in the post-Brexit situation and reaching a conclusion on the negotiations is economic issues, economic stability in both parts of this island, and we're not going to use this gigantic challenge to all of us to try and manipulate our ways towards some sort of United Ireland by the back door. And I listened to Micheál Martin the other day on RTE, and he was very constructive in his response in relation to the fallout from this deal. And I do think it's possible, not only for the government, the government is also independent as well, but also Fianna Fáil as the supporters of the Supply and Confidence Agreement, and even Labour, to support a wording that might help assuage unionist fears, because we do have to assure them that we're not trying to con them in any way. All we're trying to do is to protect the economic well-being of both parts of this island, and we have to put what is our genuine interest and genuine commitments up front.
And still you'd be appalled at the lack of diplomacy. I mean, even Simon Coveney got up and made an outburst about aspirations for a 32-county republic as well, you know?
Well, been absolutely honest about it. It was unwise. I don't think that it was necessary to do it. I mean, Simon is doing a very good job, but one must remember every word uttered by anybody in this part of the island, even though it's before an internal Dáil committee, is listened to very carefully by politicians up north and politicians from a different persuasion from us. And I think we have to be careful about the language we use, particularly in the very sensitive environment in which we find ourselves. I wish that sort of point hadn't been made.
I know that you're not a fan of the DUP, but it's interesting the makeup of the DUP, and you'd wonder if they're all singing from the same hymn sheet, because there's a lot of farmers, business people within the DUP that would have issues with Brexit.
Well, you have to separate that into two contexts. The DUP party, what they are saying is, in my view, absolutely what they mean. They say what they mean and they mean what they say. But DU supporters are a different category, because it would have been my experience that an awful lot of farmers, especially big farmers in Northern Ireland, would be DUP supporters. And a big section of Northern Ireland business would be run and organized and owned by people who are likely to support the DUP. And I think they would be very unhappy with the current DUP stance in this issue, if it's going to lead to the sort of mess that we fear. But the DUP party, I have no doubt, is speaking, the parliamentary party at Westminster is speaking as one on this issue, and we should not delude ourselves that it's doing anything other than that. That's the problem we have to face in trying to find a way out of this mess.
If the Tory party is brought down, we're looking at a Jeremy Corbyn-led Labour government of some hue. What difference will that make to the whole scenario?
Well, given the mess that the Tory party is in, given the mess they're making of the current situation, maybe it would be better that there was another general election. I mean, I never thought I'd say this, because Jeremy Corbyn horrifies me as well, but it may create the possibility that the issue can be revisited. Because one way of encompassing the
sort of... way, John, when you say revisited, do you mean another referendum?
No, but what the Conservatives wrongly did, what Theresa May in particular wrongly did, in interpreting the outcome of the referendum, The decision of the referendum was that Britain decided to leave the EU. It did not decide to leave the single market and the customs union. The British government under Theresa May chose to interpret it as that. So another government in the UK could choose to interpret it. The negotiations that should be concluded were about Britain leaving the EU, but not necessarily the single market of the customs union. The problem in the Tory party is they want to leave the single market and the customs union, and it's difficult for Theresa May to persuade her colleagues in the Conservative Party to do that. But maybe under a new government, and because there is a difficulty even for the Labour Party, because huge sections of Labour Party support also wanted Britain to leave the EU. You saw that in the decisions in Labour-held constituencies. But maybe a deal could be concluded which allows Britain to remain part of either the customs union or the single market, or both. For example, Norway is in the single market, and Turkey is in the customs union, but neither are parts of the European Union. And but in those sort of alignments would allow the development of either the UK as a whole remaining in some form of the single market or in all of the customs union, but on another type of agreement. And I actually thought that what the British should have went for was a European Free Trade Association agreement, which would have allowed Britain to continue to be in the single market and the customs union, and on an a la carte basis pick those aspects of the single market which it wanted to be in. And it wouldn't have been under the scope of it wouldn't have been under the European Court of Justice, and many of the concerns of Brexiteers is that Britain would continue to be under the scope of the European Court of Justice. But maybe a new political alignment caused by a general election might afford the possibility, not necessarily of changing the decision. I prefer the decision could be reversed, but that's always going to be a difficulty. But at least modifying how it's going to be implemented, and I think the best way of doing that was either Britain, if it chooses to accept the decision of the referendum, even under a new government led by Jeremy Corbyn or whatever, decided that it would leave the European Union, but that it would stay either as a member of the customs union or the single market, or both, maybe under EFTA.
And with the new government, it's my understanding, John, that if they did want to even reverse the situation, they could do so without going back to the people. Isn't that true?
Well, it's a parliamentary democracy. It's not like ourselves. It doesn't have a constitution which forces it and obliges it to respect the decision of a referendum. But the point I make is, You have to keep faith also with the will of your electorate. And I stress again, it's not just Conservative voters wanted Britain to leave the EU. There's considerable amount of Labour voters would also do it. There's any range of possibilities. Maybe the decision of the referendum, or maybe the decision of a final deal could be left in the hands of the electorate and see what they think of continuing to pursue the referendum result, if it's going to be disastrous for them, because I think any analysis of the outcome of the negotiations would be a disaster for the UK. But I think that really, when you look at it, from outside, this Conservative government is living on borrowed time, and it's an absolute mess.